What's it like to live in a car for months on end where you're trying to suffer alone and you can't tell anyone what you're going through?
The worst is when people come banging on your car door, though. But it's a safe place. So you wake up early and I was like, okay, what I'll do is I'll go for a run up and down the beach and like warm myself up to the point where you get really sweaty and hot so you can, no matter what the temperature is, you'll enjoy the swim, you know? And, you know, so many people say if you swim every day in the ocean and then, like, it has healing powers, right? I reckon it does. Because whenever I did that, I just felt good. You know, life's shit. I'm, like, homeless. Uni is a struggle. I don't have
at least the water's cold.
You don't want to burden your family, so you keep going and you keep going while studying university. So this story is going to resonate with a lot of people going through challenges.
I had student allowance.
Oh, yeah.
I was studying. I was at uni.
Oh, bro, you would have had heaps of money. No rent. Yeah, I had $240 a week. What is it?
Yeah, it was like, at the time, it was $180. I think it was $180. That's what I was able to get, you know, normal with me. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you helped your family.
I was able to, like, you know, get a week.
Oh, you've given it to them. Told them it's the I'll handle everything all alone.
Yeah, exactly.
And how they rise above it. What can you do to get out of a situation when it feels like there's no hope?
All right, should we kick into it?
Yeah, let's kick into it, man.
You'll get more comfortable as it goes.
Yeah, good.
Because
this is first thing in the morning as well, like Monday
just
morning.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, because we've like delayed it so many times. I was like, I know if I commit something on a Monday morning, that's it. Like, I have to do it. You know,
okay.
That's one of my rules.
All right.
As the week goes on, things tend to loosen up. And that's just the nature of, you know, like our office and work, man. You know, things happen and, you know, clients start kicking up a fuss or, you know, things start happening during the week. So I'm beginning to find, with just like organizing myself, that I try to now make all my rock solid commitments in the beginning of the week and then try to keep it looser, you know, towards the end of the week, so I can be reactive to things.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've pissed off quite a few people. Someone wants to fight me in a boxing charity match. And he was one of the guys who was like, he cancelled on me. I'm like, hey, look, no dramas, mate, all the best. Not on a podcast, but it was like to catch up.
Yeah.
So he wanted to catch up with me and he wanted to ask about how to do a podcast. I was like, yeah bro, sure, I'd love to do that. And then he said that on the day, he's like, oh, can I change it? I've got I just got invited to this event, this networking thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, nah, man. All the best. So I'm trying to work that out because I was too, like, over the top on it.
Yeah.
With values.
So I don't know. Like, I liked what you said the other day.
Oh, you agreed? Like, yeah, what's your feedback on it? I mean, this is a podcast, but
yeah.
I'm not saying
good. No, when you did that, it definitely is divisive.
Yeah.
You know, it certainly is, you know, it could piss people off, but I saw it and I was like, no, fair enough.
Huh.
Again, I'm very logical. So if the logic makes sense, then I will remove all emotion from it. So I'm very, very conscious of like separating emotion and logic, right? And so I saw that and I was like, logically it makes sense. Like, you commit to something, like either like fucking turn up, or if you're not going to, like, do it well in advance, you know, and don't waste people's time, blah, blah, blah. So I saw all of that and I was like, from Ryan's perspective, that is more than fair. So that's why I was like, okay, Monday morning.
If I didn't do this podcast,
you switched me on, man.
Turned up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I went too over the top with it. Because the core values of the company and myself are, you know, responsibility.
Yeah.
Authenticity and empathy.
Yeah.
And I've just found that when people keep agreements, I feel safer around them.
Mm.
But then I also know that's rare. Like that.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, especially if I haven't met someone and you're like, it comes across sometimes jaded as well. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you motherfucker, what? I didn't feel nothing about it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, is this my people? You know what
I mean? Yeah, but this thing you're being, oh man, okay, we've got lots to talk about then.
Yeah, go on then.
Because, you know, a big thing to me is values, right?
Okay. What are yours?
So there's, okay, good. There's my personal values and there's our company values, right? And they're actually intertwined and they're becoming more and more intertwined as time goes on. But there's a saying I have, in our company we use it a lot, which is hire by competency. I mean, it's hire by values over competency. So it used to be hire by values, not competency. And then we're like, oh, we've hired a couple of people that
have no competency.
They're great people, but you know. But hire by values first, basically. So we define our values very strongly. And then, you know, like you said, find your people and our interview process and everything. I've got personal values, but values are like no bosses, only leaders. That's like our biggest one. And for me as well. So it's sort of, you know, don't be someone's boss, don't micromanage them, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, lead them, which is fostering an environment where they can succeed, and you know, foster an environment in which they can lead what they do. So there's that. But my values is like that, and I've got a few personal values, man. One of them is my big one, which is like my inner circle values. Like, you know, you've got different circles in which you operate, you know, your social environment, and your inner circle is like your, not necessarily your family, but people are at that level, you know, and it's like unconditional trust and loyalty and all that kind of stuff. And you've got different circles outside of that. Mm. And I kind of categorize people into different circles. So between like inner circle, which is like the very, very tight inner circle, like no matter what they do, it'd kill for them kind of thing. And then there's the next one, which is like good friends and family. And then after that, there's like...
and family. So are there anyone from your family in your inner circle?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. But not all of them. Mm. Not the traditional ones. That should usually be in there.
There's a mixture. because the thing is, but when I say family, like, you know, you can't pick your blood, but you can pick your family, right?
Mm.
So that's a big part of it. But that's one of my values. But
wait, on that, what's your advice to someone that maybe has a relationship with their family that isn't the best and it's bringing them down?
Mm.
But then everyone tells them their family, you got to stick together, and makes them feel guilty for that. Like, how do you balance between family and values?
Yeah, that's to me, it's just draw a line in the sand where your values sit. And if you're strong on your values, then it's something that has to come from you. So for me, my inner circle values, right? I, you know, I'll practice them and you know, live and breathe it. But if someone's not returning that, you know, that they shouldn't be in their inner circle.
Mm.
You know,
how do you practice? So, like, let's say someone's been in your life for 20 years,
mm.
and suddenly you've developed a more boundary focused life.
Yeah,
and it developed a bit more self worth,
mm-hmm.
and then you got to have that chat where you don't want to give up on them.
Yep.
So you want to start the chat and then yeah. they yeah. don't want to be a part of it, and then they yeah. end the chat. So what's your chat?
Oh, actions speak louder than words.
Mm.
There you go.
Actions speak louder than words. So they say they want to do it, but they don't do it.
Yeah, the thing is, it's you know, there's a quote from, actually it's a John Wick movie, which there's a quote in it that I really loved, and I'm like, man, I'm going to remember that. And it was friendship, it said, but I put it as loyalty. Means nothing or means little when it's convenient, you know. So that's the whole action speak louder than words. And you know, there's not a trial you have to go through to get into an inner circle or anything, but you know, it becomes very clear very quickly if people are prepared to do what they need to for you, if they're in your inner circle or not, you know. So I've had a few of those conversations before, you know.
How was it? Did you shit yourself? Did you repress your emotions? You probably repress your emotions. Is it logical about it?
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, zero emotion. Yeah.
Look, you didn't do the actions.
Yeah. Dude, man, you're getting to know me too quick.
That's the problem. That's why people don't post the podcast, because I just fucking...
Yeah, anyways. You nail it up. But yeah, no, it's very much like that. But there's something I'm trying to work on as well, is trying to temper logic, or like... I call it logic and some people call it brutal honesty. But you try to temper it with like with love, you know, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, man. So, well, hey, that inner circle, that's one value. But the other one is totally what you were talking about the other day when you emailed me, which was like respect people's time. You know, like that's a big one for me. It's like respecting people's time and just being honest, like being really like blunt and honest to me. Like, just be real.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds so cliche, yeah. Like so corny. Like, be real.
No, but, like, most people are shit. Yeah, yeah, like they're. Me included, like the consequence of a social failing is so high for humans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it's resources, whether it's connection.
Mm.
So you're justified to be fearful of being brutally honest.
Yeah, yeah. And that's well said. Yeah,
they love you eventually.
Oh man, that's the thing. If what I found is, if you're honest like that, you like you cut the fat really quick. In your life, you know, I call it cutting the fat.
You're cancelled.
Yeah.
BMI check, we're in a circle.
BMI check. You know, like, you know, we could call it something else here, but like, we could call it cut the waste. But yeah, if you cut the fat from things, it, like, I find that it works really quick if you're honest. Like, it very quickly reveals, you know, who's there for the right reasons and who's not. You know, and it's in work and personal life. And I've alluded to that a few times because I do have a bit of a separation between the two, obviously. A lot of people do. But, you know, they're undeniably, like, entwined at some point, so the values have to come through on both sides. And I find that, yeah, if you're just brutally honest, it cuts the fat really quick, you know, in your inner circle or in your work, in your team.
Cut the fat quick, yeah, yeah. No, it does. I've been experimenting with something recently.
Yeah.
The ripe old age of 32 is people, I would find things wrong with girls as an excuse not to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I'll find this thing and I'll be like, oh, yeah, nah, I don't like that about you. When in actual fact, I'm afraid to expose myself and be vulnerable with this girl. How do you balance between having boundaries and core values? So this is my inner circle, this is not.
Yeah.
And courage to be vulnerable and using the boundaries as an excuse not to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Okay. So that is one of the values of the inner circle, is that honesty.
Honesty and vulnerability, are they the same thing?
Yeah.
Like, are you emotionally expressive?
Yeah, I've got to work on that.
Yeah. So how do, what's been the trade-off, I guess? So logically, you're really probably good at under pressure, and people come to you for solutions. You're the solution guy, and you can high threshold of resilience because you're not giving much.
Yeah.
Because it's here. Yeah. So you can handle a lot.
Yeah.
But then also it softens the joys of life, you know, going here and there.
Oh, gosh. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head.
I don't even know. You're just...
No, but you're hitting the nail on the head with sort of, you know, what people come to me for, and the fact that I, you know, can separate myself from, we're saying emotion, but I guess for me, it's a way to deal with stress and to keep a level head through whatever you need to do. So... that's what I was saying, you know, with the background before, you were saying, you know, you must have always been an overachiever or underachiever or whatever it was. It's sort of having dealt with such high stress and having that seriously affect your life a while ago, you kind of build up defenses, you know. And that's what I mean by hitting the nail on the head, because you were saying you use this logic and people come to you for solutions and stuff, but you're probably quite guarded and stuff. And yeah, totally. Like, there's definitely walls. You know, and you're like, okay, so to not let the stress in and the demons and kind of thing, like, throw up this wall of, like, brutal honesty and logic kind of thing, and it'll filter out all the crap, you know, and it seems to work pretty well.
Do you know Izzybots?
Izzybots, that rings a bell.
Joshua, I feel like you guys would have been the boys. You and Flow Marketing's another guy.
Okay. Oh, Flow Marketing, yeah, that's in Takapuna?
Yeah, I just know the bloke because I interviewed him, and The theme between this archetype is intense moments of stress and trauma.
Yes.
And then finding a way to get around it.
Mm-hmm.
And then intimacy is often the thing that comes at the expense of it.
Yeah.
So it's like you've got this ability to achieve, to go to the gym, to fucking run an effective business.
Yeah.
And then the cost is the depth of your relationships with others.
Yeah, it's funny. That's you know, that is certainly a cost. And also that's why I've stuck with the inner circle thing, because the way I've retained the right relationships and important ones is through those values.
Hmm.
And because people, you know, if you're in the inner circle, anyone in that circle, and there's about 6 or 7 people in there, I share everything with those people, so they know everything about me. But that's what I mean by, like, I expect, you know, the inner circle values back, which is, you know, keep things to yourself, obviously, but, you know, do right by each other, and the line in the sand is, are you acting with good intention? So everything you need to do is have good intention for the other person, and have that honesty and the loyalty. And I guess, you know, you've raised another one, which is being vulnerable as well. I think within the inner circle, we have that.
All of them or just one? Like where you're like, just like, hey, this happened when I was 3, and you start weeping. Yeah. As opposed to, I don't like this about you. You know what I mean? I'm being vulnerable.
Truly, when's the last time I cried? I haven't had my first cry of 2023 yet.
Oh, haven't you? No. I'm probably too far on the other spectrum. I'll watch McLeod's Daughters and I'll cry. So.
I need to work on that as well. I like what you said about that brutal logic kind of, you know, allows you to deal with business or stress, but then at the cost of what? And that is that level of intimacy or vulnerability, I suppose. Because I find, you know, because I'm, you know, I've developed that ability or skill in the last few years. So I'm still feeling the effects of it.
Oh, you know? Okay. So fucked up shit happened a few years ago.
Fucked up shit happened.
Living in a car or something.
Should we go there? Yeah. I've lived in my car for months at a time.
Months?
Yeah.
Bro, how warm is it like when the sun comes in, and how cold is it when the sun's not here?
Oh, it's freezing cold. The thing is, we say freezing cold, but I'm like, I always try to, you know, scale it. And if you like, if you look on a world scale, New Zealand's a great place to be homeless, man. All places, because it's actually not too bad, or at least Auckland. Like, if even in winter, it's cold.
But
it's not like ice cold, you know, it gets chilly. You know, and there's always a beach. There's always a public shower.
Yeah.
You know, Norfolk Beach is great for that.
Yeah.
There's showers there. And,
what are your top 5 homeless getaways?
Ariwa, Milford. I'm just going to, that was way too quick. Eh? I should be like, I don't know, man. Milford, Ariwa. Ariwa, I lived in next to the beach there for like 6 months.
No shit.
But that was over 10 years ago now.
10 years ago. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 31.
So, 21.
I just turned 31.
Congrats. Happy birthday. Yeah,
sorry,
I didn't get you anything.
Else. Yeah, that's fine.
Bro. I'm not in the circle. So like,
you're not in the inner circle. It's fine. But I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
You're shit.
You can be really honest, right? You're fine. Safe space.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what happened 10 years ago? I've got some similar stories too. Probably.
Yeah.
I don't think I've talked about them.
Man, okay. But I won't get too detailed, but basically, you know, financial crisis, you know, family had issues with finances and stuff, and my family's always been really strong, but yeah, definitely, you know, a few issues.
Family as in you partner, or family as in
immediate family? Yeah. So I had some, you know, hardship, and for me, I'm pretty, even back then, very independent, so I didn't want to be another burden, or, you know, be a cost.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so off I went. So did that, and
they didn't know you're
for most of it. Yeah, for a lot of it. Well, the thing is, they were, you know, family were, you know, having a hard enough time as it was, you know, with their own housing and stuff. So I'll leave that. That's their business, right?
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, okay. I told them, don't worry about me. I'm sorted. And I think people thought I was staying at a friend's house or doing this. Didn't have any friends, so I was like, okay, I'll sleep in my car. Old Toyota Corona 1988.
Oh, that goes hard. That's luxury.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I had a car, you know.
Yeah. And did you leave it, like, do you have money for petrol?
I had student allowance.
I was studying.
I was at uni, you know. So I had that.
Oh, bro, you would have had heaps of money then.
Yeah,
no rent.
Yeah, I had
$240 bucks a week. What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. At the time, it was like $180. I think it was $180. That's what I was able to get, and but you know, not all of it went to me. So
you helped your family.
I was left with, like, you know, yeah, barely anything per week.
You're giving it to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll handle everything all alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. I'm sure you were
just some damage, but
sitting there with joy, just looking at the sunrise, happy.
definitely some rough patches, but at the same time, I'm so glad it happened, man, because also some of the best times I've had were on the beach, you know, with the car and meeting random people, and, you know, it's cool. But
did you ever have to explain it to a girl, or just go back to her house? Oh yeah.
I did. Big time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's heaps of room in the back.
Funny. This is some of the other stuff I've been through. So a lot of trauma, man. I've just got divorced recently.
Oh, recently?
Yeah, very recently.
Oh.
The person I got divorced with was the person who I had to explain it to.
Oh, the first.
Yeah. What it was, I was going to her house and I was, you know, seeing her and her family and blah, blah. And I used to leave, you know, late at night, like 10 or 11 p.m. And she'd come up to the driveway and say, see you later, and go back to her parents, you know, her folks' house. And one day she was like, she sat in the car with me when I was about to leave. And she was like, hey, before you go, I was like, yeah, she's like, I've got a question. I was like, yeah, she's like, are you sleeping in your car? And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, yeah, yeah. How do you tell? And she was like, they're just signs.
I was like the mattress. Yeah.
That's the thing. I opened the boot and there was blankets and shit. And I was like, oh yeah, I was just, you know, having a sleepover or whatever. And she was like, there are signs. And
sleepover.
Yeah. And there was a couple of mornings where I went to their house super early in the morning. I was like, do you mind if I pop by your house for a shower? You know, so a little bit too obvious, I think. Yeah, man. So
let's get in the hacks. Homeless hacks.
Homeless hacks?
Yeah. So.
Oh, God. I'm terrible at being homeless. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you would have been all fucked up, not telling anyone and suffering alone. Yeah,
yeah.
We've got the model.
Yeah, look, yeah, yeah. The model, yeah, okay.
And then repress everything so you can carry on with life.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
It's a good model. It works.
It's
not sustainable, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, it gets you out.
Survival mode. It's just survival mode.
Yeah. What actually would you advise people around that? Because a lot of people have been in that spot, and they might not talk about it. And they're struggling. They're not sure where the money's going to come from. They have a sense of duty to the people they care about.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do I do? I feel lost.
Man, good question. It's funny because there's stuff I don't talk about.
And see, this is where another podcast is going to get deleted, bro.
Yeah. This is interesting because a lot of people know me and don't know about this stuff. But my advice on... What was your question again? Is getting through...
Someone going through what Josh did.
Yeah.
And they need you to mentor them to get out of it. What is your advice?
Oh, great. If I could talk to myself back then.
Oh, yeah.
It would genuinely be like your own personal mental health is a huge factor in it, right? And it affects you more than you think long term. So for me, it would be to... this is going to sound so trite, but relax. You know, it's not the end of the world. And things are actually good. So I would have, like, because what I did to get through it was what I do now as well, is I often, it sounds very, oh gosh, it sounds very podcasty, but like count your blessings and you know, the whole be grateful thing, you know, those things I found, if I kept those front of mind all the time, like my inner circle are alive and well, I'm living in New Zealand, I can lie on the beach, you know, I am getting some cash, you know, and there is actually a way out. So all of those things, I just kept those front of mind and tried to enjoy the little things. So I built a little routine over in the morning and I threw myself into exercise.
Oh yeah. Mm. On low calories.
Yeah. On low calories. Cause those are like bread and cans of salmon at the time were like $1.20 or 90 cents.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you what your food rating was.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Oh yeah.
But that helped be very healthy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, cause the thing is you can do it badly as well. Like, you know, a few bucks and you can get chips, you know, like, fish and chips, but like I wanted, non-perishables, you know, so you can keep it in the car. So cans of salmon, sardines is really good. Kansas sardines, you learn to love those, man. But threw myself into exercise, so it's a great routine. I was like, you know, I was going to uni at the time and I was trying to finish my last uni from my car. That's crazy. So my routine was like wake up really early and I'd be sleeping near a beach, either Arewa Beach or Milford Beach or somewhere on the shore, because that's sort of my familiar territory and it feels safe as well, like, if you know, because
Arewa. Oh, no, Arewa, yeah, the beach place.
Yeah, sorry, up north, sorry. Yeah. Arewa, you know, beachside town. The average age of people in Arewa is 65. It's a very safe place, you know. The worst is when people come banging on your car door, though. But it's a safe place. So you wake up early, and I was like, okay, what I'll do is I'll go for a run up and down the beach and, like, warm myself up to the point where you get really sweaty and hot so you can, no matter what the temperature is, you will enjoy the swim, you know. And, you know, so many people say if you swim every day in the ocean, then, like, it has healing powers.
I reckon
it does. Because whenever I did that, I just felt good. You know, life's shit. I'm like homeless, uni is a struggle. I don't have
at
a
least the water's cold.
Yeah, and you get out of the water and you're like, oh, like, man, I'm just happy. You know.
Yeah.
So I do that, and I threw myself into it. I was like, I'll grow my hair long.
Because
you know things like because little luxuries like haircuts, washing your clothes.
Yeah,
those are things. Those are things that like
don't
make,
happen.
They make you human, right?
Mm.
Well, you know, and there's those things that separate you from everyone else's dirty clothes. You know, if you're all scruffed and not, you know, well-groomed, like, it separates you from everyone else.
Sure.
So for me, I was like, if you throw yourself into it, and it's kind of like your look, you know? So I was like, okay, long hair, cool. And you find ways around, I mean, washing your clothes, you find ways to wash your clothes. But I threw myself into that, and then I was like, okay, I'll just be really fit. So I'll run every morning. I'll do that. I'll eat my can of salmon, and then I'll go into uni.
Was it one can of salmon a day?
More than that. I joined...
Oh, luxury.
At university helps a lot. So I got kicked out of the vegan club because I joined the meat club and the vegan club.
Uni. This man's just got to eat.
Yeah, I was like, man's got to eat. And what it was, I saw it as an investment. At like beginning of the semester, you could like pay, it was like $50 or something like that, which is a lot of money, you know, $50. And I was like, shit. But you get membership to that club for the rest of the semester. And every Thursday they did like a meat club lunch.
Mm.
And then there was also like the vegan club. And I was like, protein, salad. Mm. Like together, they're a perfect meal.
Yeah.
So if I join both clubs, I get free meals like a couple of times a week.
Bro, I feel like this, especially with this cost of living crisis, yeah. This turns over at 30 minutes. Yeah. There's some advice like, you know, like, let some impact the eating regime. Also, what stopped you getting a job? Was it the fact that the mental thing or you didn't want to motivate to do uni? Like, it's not the whole like, get a job sort of vibe, but like...
Yeah, funny, man. I threw myself into finishing uni and doing really well at uni. Because, and that's because my dad. So, you know, my dad, I think his advice is really good, which was, you know, I remember I spoke to him about it a few times because there was definitely like, I could just get a job. I could go dig ditches or I could go hold a lollipop sign or something, you know, like I could get one of those easy or, you know, even just a rubbish truck job or something like that.
Hey, I used to do that. Don't hate on me.
Yeah. It's good, man.
Garbage runner.
Yeah, garbage runner.
Five tons a day, mate. 10 kilometers.
Yeah.
Keeps lots changed since then. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things. And I did do a bit of work around the side. So I helped at the...
Stripping, surely.
Yeah, stripping.
Time. Oh, did you?
No. actually, man, I did some cool shit.
Oh, yeah.
Some very cool shit. I'll tell you about it. but no, my dad's advice was, you know, he's old school. He's turning 80 in 2 weeks. Yeah, so he's old school, right?
Yeah.
But he was like, finish uni, like no matter what, get through it, and add value to yourself, so you have something to offer, and you know the whole, you know, uni, you get a good job, and also you'll be able to do something that you're passionate about, and it'll start you off, and it might be a bit of a grind until that point, but don't let the urgency of survival mode kind of, you know, cloud your long term success. So
what would you study though?
Music.
Yeah, I think there's a few clouds. There.
No, yeah, I did. Piano. You're thinking I did like commerce. Or something.
I was like, all right,
you're like something you're super like, you know, career focused. I did the opposite of career focused.
Yeah,
man. I did
long hair.
Mm-hmm, I did music, but I was I literally got called a black sheep by a lecturer in front of 100 people because I was like doing the commercializing of music, so. You do your music degree, and I was doing music composition, so it's composing for orchestras and composing for things. So I've got first class honors in music, but what
composing,
I ended up doing
these things.
Oh, what's so, no, no, so I'm so that, that's so composing is writing music.
Okay, sorry. You know.
But what I did was I did music for film and video games, and then I did my postgrad in sound design for video games. So I actually got quite technical. And so when I was going to the, like some of the papers that you have to do, which are the more like general, you know, music theory and that kind of stuff, you know, I wasn't very interested in that stuff. I was just interested in like the more techie part and sound engineering and stuff and how to put sound into games. So for my honors project, I created like a 3D sound environment, did some computer science papers to learn how to do that, and then had like an interactive 3D sound environment and, you know, made a room full of speakers so it was like binaural sound panning and everything so you could interact on the computer with different objects and then the sound would be dead accurate. So that was sort of my postgrad. Yeah, so I got very technical. It went from sort of like, you know, La La Music Land in the first couple of years to being very, very technical.
La La.
Yeah.
Did you play guitar or sing? Or what
I'm a guitarist, man.
You're a guitarist.
Yeah, I click guitars.
The ladies would have wished that you brought your guitar, mate, and you battled something out. Can you sing or you just play a guitar? I won't make you sing. And you
I just play guitar, man. I do sing a little bit, but just because I had to at music school. It was just one of the requirements, you know, so you have to. But
so that's how the homeless guy, you know, convinced the lady.
Dude, I busked.
You busked? Yeah. Yeah,
that's because when you're asking how I made money before, like, I didn't have a job, but I busked. And I did some other stuff as well, like, oh, just some interesting stuff to make money, man.
Go on, keep going.
You know, if there's a, you know, if we can edit or potentially knock things out of this podcast.
Yeah. No, surely cop it. Surely go, like, say, only say things you can own.
Yeah.
I don't want to edit it.
Yeah.
And people don't want to hear it edited. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll help you. So I ran out of money. Yeah. I wasn't sure what to do. And there was this dress up competition.
Yeah.
And, and you had to find a costume starting with S. And if you win, you get $100.
Slut.
Close, streetwalker.
Okay.
Okay. Great guess.
Yeah.
Because I had a friend, she was a dancer.
Yep.
We'll say. Nah, she's a stripper. But she had these wonderful clothes.
Yeah.
So I got all dressed up. She dressed me up in these clothes, gave me makeup.
Yeah.
It's the most horrific thing you can imagine. And I worked it. So I got my $100.
You did?
Yeah. And then I could
$100
week.
Man. Yeah.
That was a game changer.
Yeah. Shit, man. Okay, we got some. I got to hear more about you. Damn. I didn't do that. I've worked with strippers before, but not. It was much more glamorous. I was very lucky that I got to. I enrolled as like an extra.
Oh yeah.
For different.
Shortland Street, surely no.
Shortland Street. They offered me a few times, and I said no, because like the cost of like petrol and parking was almost the same or more as what they were gonna pay you. You know, but you know Spartacus.
Oh, you're in the show? Yeah, that makes sense.
I was in the last season of Spartacus.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Who'd you kill? What'd you do?
I died.
Oh, you died.
Yeah.
Typical way. Get the depressed fucking monkey.
Walk in there like, he's dead. I got cast, but I was on a few episodes, and yeah, they paid pretty well. And because they paid, you know, you per day to be on set, but then the days often you'd had to be on set by 4 a.m. So I'd get up at like 3 a.m., drive there.
Wow.
And then, you know, I didn't need to get dressed or anything because you do everything there, costume and stuff. So I was like, sweet, they had showers, they had costume.
Mom.
So get whipped up and the long hair was part of it.
Jesus.
You know? So they got me in, looked the part, you know, as a pirate. And then, I was like an evil pirate dude killing people. And then, so did that. And then, you know, then you can, because you've got makeup and like fake blood and stuff all over you, then they've got showers at the end of the day. So you have a wicked hot shower. They had gym stuff on set. You know, so I had a workout, a gym, catering. Is there obviously like good food?
How did it compare to the vegan group?
I'd do way better. I could have like whatever, yeah, because all the dudes were like buff as, you know, Spartacus, right? All the gladiators and stuff. So they had like protein powders there. They had steaks, eggs, like salads, like everything. Amazing catering, man.
Wow.
Yeah, they had a huge budget. So that was really nice. I did that for a few months, on and off. But all the days would often go from, you know, they're like, oh, it starts at 4 a.m. and, you know, you should be out there at a normal working daytime, but we'll be out of there by 9 p.m. or like, you know, 10 p.m. and that kind of stuff. So then I was like, sweet, I'll just find a spot to park up and sleep and then turn up the next morning and collect my paycheck. So like, I actually got some good money that way.
Wow.
Yeah. And I could save a lot of it because, you know, it wasn't, my costs weren't high.
There's no tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
IRD, listening? He's here.
Yeah. Yeah, cash money. Yeah. So yeah, I did stuff like that, you know, but on Spartacus were a lot of strippers, you know.
Oh yeah, it makes sense.
Because there's a lot of naked people, extras, you know, in the background, and they were all like strippers and stuff, and they were like, I'm already do it, might as well go on Spartacus and get $3,000 a day to do it. So made a few stripper friends doing that, which was cool.
Yeah. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're salespeople.
Yeah.
I always, from afar, because I dated one for a few years, and she's not just a stripper, she's, you know,
she's a lovely human
lady. She's a human being with dreams. It's wonderful to you together.
Yeah.
And it was interesting hearing the motivation to go to the clubs. It wasn't so much the aesthetics of the male experience. It was more the guys that would come consistently wanted to feel valued and appreciated and listened to. It was more of an emotional experience.
Developing a relationship of some sort.
So they talk about their feelings, they'd open up because they're paying. It's like, I find people need an excuse to get helped.
Yeah.
That's why finance is quite useful. It's like, I'm not, like, I'm helping you archetype your life.
Yeah.
And helping you with emotions and navigating challenging experiences. But you're coming because you think you're going to make money.
Yeah.
So you almost need an excuse that, like, if someone came up to you, oh, help you, bro, it's okay. Like, you would just, I don't know, I feel like you'd feel like, help me. No. Also, please. Somewhere between them.
No, yeah.
How could have someone helped you back then? It would have had to be your idea, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's very difficult to help me. Yeah, yeah.
Slip them in, bro.
Yeah. Actually, my ex, she, when she found out, she like forced me to stay with her and her family for a while. So at the end of it, I ended up staying at their place for a while.
How did you juggle the guilt? What was your payment in exchange for the guilt? Did you wash the ceiling or something?
Oh gosh. I feel like you would have exchange for the guilt? Yeah. man. Actually, battling with my own values to match the values of the house, the family. Yeah.
So chameleon.
Yeah. Chameleon, like, so definitely like adapting who you are, which is, you know, your core. So yeah, that was the, I think that was the price I paid, or at least that's the way I battled the guilt.
Interesting.
Was that like living kind of their way?
So, gotcha.
Religion and, you know.
Yeah. So you're not religious.
No, I'm
Is there a God, yes or no?
Is there a God? Oh, agnostic.
Oh, yeah, cough out.
Yeah, I'm a cop out. I'm on the fence.
Typical you, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Just like everyone's friend.
No, for me, you know, there must be something.
Oh, you think? Okay, so you think there's a God?
Yeah.
What would you call it?
That's the thing. I just question what the definition is. Like, what is God? You know, and if God is like some omnipresent being that has an opinion and a personality, which is what Christians seem to think, because he gets pissed off and floods the planet.
You got so much venom with floods of planet. <Do I? laughs>
And then
it was a flood, it's proven.
Yeah. you know, there's that kind of stuff, and then there's, you know, but you know, that I do believe that there's some kind of you know, maybe higher power out there that we can't possibly comprehend.
Mm.
I find, like, when you think about it, when we think about
sorry, you think, bro. No judgment.
Yeah, the Big Bang, or, you know, the start of the universe, right? No matter whether it was dinosaurs or not, like, that's like almost semantics. It's, if you look at the start of everything, you know, what was before that? You know?
And who made God?
Yeah, and who made God? And before time, what you know, time is, you know, you can't not have time.
Do you think there's not an answer for that, or the humans don't know how to comprehend the
exactly
answer?
That's what I'm getting at. I think there's some blocker we have, you know, we can't comprehend that, and maybe we're going to invent, like, maybe it's in cannabis, maybe it's in cocaine, I don't know, but there's something that unblocks your brain and you can suddenly understand it. But you know, there's that blocker there which makes me think, okay, there's, you know, we're very limited, you know, very, very limited in our thinking and our understanding of things. So
what's the evolutionary benefit of being able to comprehend it? There's not really.
Some kind of higher being. I don't know. Maybe we can. Don't need to sleep anymore. I don't know.
No, I mean,
I'd like that.
Yeah, that would be useful.
Yeah.
No, I'd hate that. I'm happy with how things are. I'm happy that I'm going to die eventually. Because I don't know if you ever try to complete an assignment with no due date. Like, it's not getting done.
Yeah.
Or maybe you would, because you do run in the morning and you do the.
Actually, no, restriction or like, you know, those, you know, having that criteria definitely helps with productivity.
Mm.
Yeah. So having a deadline.
Was there a point that God ever came into your life?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Interesting.
But I don't think it really did. So, well, again, it's, you know, what did you do to counteract the guilt? Which was a very good question on your part. And part of that was.
Thank you. Yeah.
It was being like, okay, I think there's God and.
So you went from agnostic to, yo, this God has personality. Yes, the world's only 5,000 years old.
Yeah, well, like, I never changed my opinions on those things, but I began to, you know, accept that, you know.
Did you pray?
Not really.
Like, did you close your eyes when they prayed? Because they would have done that whole grace thing.
Oh, dude, every day. Yeah.
And you're just like thinking about what you're going to do for the day.
I got asked it. I got asked to pray a few times as well.
Oh.
And dude, I'm not sure what I said was the best, but you know, because there's always thanking God for what you get given and for what's on the plate.
Would you be friends with God if he was sitting here?
No.
Yeah. I always struggle with that, eh?
Yeah.
But then also, so I think about why would there be suffering? Why would there be a need to ask for forgiveness? Why would you kill people?
Yeah.
Then I also think about the traits you admire most about yourself.
Yeah.
You know, resilience or patience.
Yeah.
You needed to suffer in order to develop those characteristics.
Mm-hmm. You're saying no pain, no gain.
No pain, no gain.
Yeah.
It perfectly summed it up. No, but like if you're an all-loving, all-knowing being, would you inflict cruelty?
That's it. You know, and...
But well, what if it's not cruel? What if it's what they need? What if Job needed that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people, yeah, I've been asked that a lot of times and had a lot of heated discussions, but then I'm just like, look at some of the shit that's going on the planet, and you look at, I don't know, cancer or the, you know, the worms that infest children in Africa and that kind of stuff. I'm like, who thinks of that shit?
Mm.
You know?
Well, here's my pushback.
Okay.
If there was no suffering, yep, and we all had we were the same humans, but there was nothing cruel or tough, would our happiness be any different?
Have you heard of the 21st universe?
No, I haven't heard of the 21st universe.
Yeah, because your question has been answered.
Oh, yeah, don't say 42. Is it 42? Yeah. No.
No. 21st universe is just the code name or the reference to a study that was done years ago. It was an 18-year study. That was done by a bunch of people on rats or mice, and they had different groups of rats or mice over the course of 18 years, and they gave them different levels of like toughness or, you know, difficulty to survive.
Mm.
And the ones that had to suffer or had to struggle to survive, they thrived. They did really well. They bred more. So that their sex drive was way higher, you know, they were breeding, they were collaborating with each other, you know, and they became healthier over the course of 18 years. That line of rats or mice became happier and healthier. So they found ways to measure their happiness, which was the way they interact with each other and, you know, do they cuddle at night and all that kind of stuff. And then the group that they did everything for, they always had food. They had a nice enclosure. They had everything that they needed. They lost their sex drive. Mm. So they stopped breeding and they started getting aggressive and attacking each other.
Hmm.
And they seemed to just find problems, you know?
Interesting.
And that's just a brief summary of the study. But I think really the conclusion they drew is when things are too easy and there's no survival instinct and you remove like natural selection and you remove that suffering that you're talking about, you know, people... you know, find problems and things, and stress and problems are relative, aren't they?
Yeah. Do you think about that in that situation? It reminds me one of my least favorite animal, which is pandas, because fuck them. But anyways, because they're racist. Just so cuddled and they don't fuck, and now they're dying. It's like,
oh really?
Yeah, because they don't breed. They don't really breed in captivity because they're too cuddled. Like fuck them. If you want to die, die. Like, you know what I mean, leave fucking pandas, bro.
No, there you go, 21st universe.
Yeah, 21st universe. Shout out.
Yeah.
Now, I was thinking, so you've got the suffering, these challenges that people go through in their life. If you put yourself in that car situation, if you didn't have the expectation that had been assigned to you by others,
mm-hmm.
so when you're younger, you develop this identity based on external things.
Yeah.
External things, you interpret it,
mm-hmm.
now you have this identity.
Yeah.
If you didn't have that identity and living in the car was normal and doing that was normal and you didn't feel judged, you didn't have this expectation of yourself, you didn't really suffer.
I've actually thought about that before. I've thought about that before because it was actually not normal for me.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had a really nice, from, you know, being born to 18 or, you know, was really good. Mostly, you know, always lived in a nice house, you know, went to a good school, always had dinner, like all that kind of stuff, you know, nice family life. I grew up on Waiheke Island, So it was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very nice. But yeah, so because I suppose it was so far removed from what I considered normal and it was so below the bar, I suppose that's what you're getting at. So therefore there's these expectations and you know, thinking of viewership of others and being judged and all that kind of stuff. So it gave me a crazy drive to get out of it. Is that what you, that's kind of what you're getting at, I think?
Well, the main thing is, like, most situations objectively aren't bad apart from serious physical harm in that moment.
Yeah.
And the it's not even what people say. It's your interpretation of what they're thinking that makes your life hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of things, nobody said anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, what are they thinking? And,
you know, I'm a loser. Yeah. Can't tell anyone.
Like, yeah, 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 exactly, man. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah.
There's a quote. There's yeah. Man doesn't suffer by a crisis, but by his interpretation of it.
Yeah, dude, that's a good summary of what I was trying to say with, you know, the whole counting your blessings and look at things, I suppose, objectively. You know, like what I was saying is, you know, the inner circle was alive and I was alive and healthy. You know, I wasn't, you know, terminal.
Or anything. Sure, you had tons of food and you had you were swimming at the beach.
That's what I mean. Like, objectively, that's why I was like, New Zealand's a great place to be homeless. I've got a shower. I've got, you know, the sunrise. I've got all these things. You know, nobody's bombing North Shore right now. You know, so it was kind of that, you know, you think like that at least to just be like, well, like, life's really good, you know. Then the car won't start and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Screw that.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Because you're in that hum of stress. Like,
yeah.
I think of it kind of like your brain is Google. It's looking to find the things it already believes.
Yeah.
So you have a predestined search that it's trying to find.
Yes.
Whether I'm inadequate, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy of love, my life situation sucks, the car didn't start again, what the fuck, the tuna can, this thing snapped off so I can't open it.
Yeah. Like, and you find your wick is so short before you blow up, hey, in those times.
It's so...
Yeah, which is like, you know, the car not starting, that's it. Yeah. The straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, it starts shaking them.
Yeah, exactly. There are a few of those moments, so when... Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think about that, like... So with this new business, I went to zero 5 different times in the last year because I started undercapitalized and didn't have anything to sell.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'll try this. Oh, no, that's shit. I'll try this. Oh, this shit. And started getting stressed because I was like, okay, I've got an employee.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to make sure they're paid.
Yeah.
I never miss payroll in a year, which is cool. Yeah.
Good.
And then also I was supporting my friend that, you know, they weren't able to pay rent. And I just started engineering this mindset, this victimhood,
because
this situation, like, I could sell, I could get a job, I could ask for help.
Yeah.
So what do you think leads to that fall? How do you go from, because right now you're somewhat accomplished, presentable, you know, you might
human,
you're a human being.
Yeah.
What leads to the breakdown of the human spirit? How does the human spirit get crushed?
How does the human spirit get
when
crushed?
Objectively it's not bad?
Yeah. Obvious one to me is removing freedom. And, you know, freedom is like you can perceive it in different ways. But, you know, your freedom or your definition of freedom and the things that you need to feel free, I think, change depending on your life situation. So I felt more free being homeless than I did at a couple of my jobs, you know? And those broke me down more than being homeless. So, you know, having a boss and feeling like, you know, like that kind of thing. Yeah. But the breakdown, it depends to what point you mean, really. Like,
well, how can someone see an experience and understand that it's not bad?
Yep.
And then add the sauce, add the flavor of disgust. How can, like, I haven't met too many people whose situation where you're like, oh, yeah, it's completely fucked. Like,
yeah.
Like, I've heard some horrors. Like, people seem to tell me stuff, good and evil. This guy I was talking a few months back, he went to prison for chopping someone's head off.
Really?
Yeah, and they just tell you this. You just ask and they tell you stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't, like...
There's a few demons, yeah. There's a few things in the closet.
Yeah. Oh, what, you want to share something with the group?
No, no chopping heads off. Nothing like that, trust me. But, like...
Well, you must have got angry and, you know...
Oh, no, there's ways to get money. Yeah, there's, you know... Like I said, there's interesting things to get money. Yeah.
Okay, I guess I don't want to get you in trouble. Yeah, I'm more worried about my guests than me.
Like, yeah, that's the thing. So, I'll leave it at that. But there are, you know, there are ways to get money, and yeah, so
how do you rationalize that, eh? How do you, not so much to going in specific about that, but
mm-hmm.
often people say to me, New Zealand is such a nice place to live. And I'm like, yes it is.
But
we're not so much nice because we're better humans.
Yeah.
We're nice because our resources are at a point where we're not competing to a huge degree on those resources. Like,
true.
We're not in a detriment.
Yeah.
Like the Treaty of Versailles post Germany. Like we're not like fucking, woo, everything's fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a scarcity is not too crazy. Yeah.
Well, it's like self-interest. It's like once I want to look after me, and most humans want to look after them, in my opinion. And often even when they help others, they're benefiting emotionally from it.
Some sort. Yeah, of course. Just nature, isn't it?
Yeah, so what leads to a good person doing bad things,
do you think? Oh, okay. Good. Okay.
Morally questionable things.
Morally questionable. it's rationalizing it so it's not a bad thing that you're doing. In my case, it was.
Mm.
You know, what I was doing was
yeah, don't get into it. But like,
serving justice, but yeah. I think, you know, putting it, how do people rationalize doing something bad? Or, you know, turn something bad into making it right, yeah? Or in your mind. I think it's, for me at least, it's always been, you know, turning it into something in your head that you're doing the right thing or you're serving justice in some way, you know?
Interesting.
There's always a good guy and a bad guy, and you just shape the other as the bad guy in some way. Like, what they did is wrong, and, you know, or they owe this person money, or...
You're alluding to so much shit.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to save you here, brother. Throw you. So, I think often it's quite hard to realize, to recognize evil when it's done in the name of good.
Yeah,
you know, you think about.
I'll tell you my line.
Oh, go on. Do
so, because you're saying, tell the difference between bad and good, and that's for me, it's one of my values, right? Or at least something that I always I ask this question with anyone, and it's whether you're cutting them out of your life, or whether it's dictating the way you treat someone or you handle a situation. It's always intention, and there's a fine line, and it's like, is their intention good or bad? And as long as, and people do things wrong all the time, but if their intention is good, you know, it's okay.
Interesting.
You know, and so for me, it's always identifying, you know, is their intention good or bad? So for me, you know, rationalizing or making things bad good, it's like I did it with good intention. From an internal perspective, you know, I was like, my intentions were good. I was trying to help someone, or I was trying to, you know, help someone, you know, a third party or whatever it is. So that's how I see it. And then and to me, you said there's evil and all that kind of stuff. And if someone's intention is bad, you know, that to me is where the line is. Yeah.
What do you think makes intention bad? Like, so I would say, so my objective is help people live fulfilling lives because I struggle with my own mind. Yeah. So all I'm doing is selfishly solving my problem in them because I like doing it.
Yeah.
How do you differentiate between good intention and bad, and what actually is intention?
Yeah. Whoa, okay. that's getting into, yeah, that's very good. It's like you need to define things very, very clearly, right?
And if you don't know, it's fine, because I never asked that question in my life.
And defining good intention and bad intention is incredibly important, and it's something that is I personally judge it. So you raise a good point. You know, how do we define it? Because for me, I'm my own judge, right? So I look at what someone does, and I'm like, they had good intention or they had bad intention, you know. And I'm just using my own experience or my own moral compass. I believe we're all installed with like a moral compass, you know. So everyone can to me, like there's good, bad, and there's evil, right? And I think everyone knows, or everyone has a line where things are evil and dark, you know.
What's evil?
I think you know, killing for fun's evil.
Killing for fun. That.
See, there you go.
I mean, valid.
Yeah,
that's like, valid. Just some shit.
Yeah, just go to the other side of the spectrum, you know. That's evil.
Bored,
yeah, yeah. But you know, so we all have that moral compass, right? Surely you can tell, you know. And so, to me, is according to your moral compass, if you're doing something that goes against it or that adheres to it, you know, that's your intention. Like if you're doing something knowingly that it's going to cause harm or hurt someone or do damage, your intention's bad. You know, if you're doing something in the name of, you know, I'm trying to help someone or make something better, or, you know, that's good intention. So it might be wrong what you did, like by action, but your intention was good. So to me, that's where I'm like, okay, that's where I forgive and forget. You know, someone do some shitty things, but I can see they meant well, that they were trying, you know. So you're like, okay, that's all good, you know.
Does that ever lead to a justification for behavior that's not okay?
Probably. Yeah, it certainly did for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the past, like, I've certainly done things like, you know.
Not now, you're cutthroat in those fucking values. Yeah. You're in the circle, you know. I don't care if I call you dad, you're not a
Yeah, that's right, man. That's right. Like, I've been brutal before. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, that's the big thing for me. Like, I'm, you know, that's one of the lines where I cut people out, where I'm like, they do something where their intention was bad. I'm like, see you later. You know?
That's interesting. Because
in work and personal, like I've met people who I've been working with and together we're succeeding, pretty, like making good money, you know. But then I see they're doing things with intentions that are not good, and I'm like, okay, I'm out.
How do you balance that between, you know, the protecting yourself and self sabotage? So like, hey, this person looks like someone that's hurt me before.
Yeah.
They have bad intention, because you're essentially subjectively assessing.
Yes,
something
very subjective. Yeah,
they blink twice, bad intent.
Yeah,
fucking no. Yeah. I go that level sometimes. Yeah. I'll just like, just aura.
There are signs, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you, scared, afraid of facing stress, and someone's objectively got bad intention and not good to be around?
Yeah.
How do you balance the defense mechanism of protecting from stress and the actual them having bad intent?
Well, it seems like they go hand in hand.
Oh, okay. Right? Okay. Come on.
Right. Well, if they've got bad intention and your defense mechanism is coming up.
So if you don't feel safe, then you're just like, bomb. Or what word would you use? Cause I use the word safety.
I'm trying to link it to, you know, real world examples. But, I mean, you're saying
this whole room was filled with bad intentions. Like, yes. Yeah. All the people, the worst that you've had in your life.
Just
looked them in the eyes.
Okay. I can see them. Yeah.
So what does that space feel like? What is it, feel comfortable, uncomfortable?
Oh,
exciting?
I see. It feels judged. It feels judged, and it feels, let's see. Well, again, this is just basic human instinct, but there's a couple of them that I would slap around a little bit, you know. That's it. But do you know what? There's no one in, you know, people who've cut out of my life, or people who I really don't like or whatever. None of them are evil. You know, I can think of a couple of people off the top of my head that, you know, if I see them, you know, we'll probably, you know, throw hands or I'll give them a slap. But they're not evil.
What would it take for you to forgive them? Because as soon as you do that and point at them, that means this person has my power.
Yeah.
So you're choosing to give them power over you.
If I forgive them.
If you don't.
Oh, if I don't forgive them. Yeah, yeah,
you're
thinking
about it and the emotions, you still want to slap them, they're not even
here. Do you know, really? Yeah, okay, so I'll...
You can slap them, then forgive them if you want.
Yeah, dude, a couple of my best friends, we, like, had it out with each other, right? Like, you know, we hated each other's guts and...
Two-piece?
Yeah, beat it. Yeah,
I'd beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, you know, like gone to a proper scrap. You know, like bloody noses and lips and stuff. And now we're great friends.
Wow.
Because you just kind of like, I mean, I think guys are just like that. Like you just settle, you know, what is it called? Squash the beef.
Yeah.
You know, beat the crap out of each other and we're like, okay.
Maybe I'm more feminine than I
know. Yeah, but you get some kind of, you get something out. Yeah, and then you're just like, you know, one dude, I remember like we scrapped and, I won't talk about the one that I lost. I'll just talk about my one. Yeah. The one dude on the ground, I remember, and I like we're like, punch each other, and he's on the ground. This is years ago. And I remember he was lying on the ground, and I was like, and he went like this. Like, oh, and I was like, and I helped him up, and he was like, oh, yeah. Like, you know, it was just kind of
interesting.
And something in me, I was just like, oh, it's all good, bro. And we kind of like hugged it out and got a bit emotional.
Oh.
And then, you know.
So that's how the repressed guy deals with feelings.
The repressed guy. Yeah. And then, you know, and now we're really good mates. Huh. You know, and like we hang out all the time, and
so see each the other initiation to the inner circle. God. What percentage of them had they been scrapped?
In my inner circle?
Yeah.
Oh, in my proper inner circle, one.
Oh, only one.
Yeah, one. But a couple of good friends. Okay. Like, not full inner circle, but guys who like I'll go hang out with, or if they text me and say, do you want to grab a beer? Like, I'll be like, yeah, sure. See how life's going and stuff, and we're, you know, we're just good friends. Okay. So,
random.
Yeah. But what was your question again, man? You had a good question and we digressed.
Oh, so we've done the intent one was yeah. one. Yeah. If you're surrounded by these people.
Forgiveness. It was about what takes you to forgive some of these people. Not much.
Wouldn't take you to forgive. Is there someone you haven't forgiven? You don't have to say their name, but.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do. It's the most valuable thing to do.
Well, there's the action of forgiving, and then as you're prepared to forgive, and yeah, there's one or two people who I'm certainly ready to, if they want to.
Oh no, so forgiveness isn't having them in your life. Forgiveness is letting go of the emotional control they have over your life.
Okay. Mm. Then in that case, yeah, for sure, forgiving them.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just me being tough and being like, they haven't got any emotional control over me.
Yeah, because you want to slap them, so I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah. That's the thing. Because they have a way of getting under your skin, but it wouldn't take much to forgive, really, because there's...
Well, imagine they can't do anything, but you can... You're the only one that can impact the forgiveness. What could you do?
Okay, how about this? All right. Here's a conundrum.
Okay.
One person who I'm happy to forgive, and like, and I did in my mind, I was like, forgive and forget, like they're gone, but they keep cropping up actively, you know,
keep coming back.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, so like, you know,
yeah, boundaries.
Yeah.
But the emotion you slightly showed,
yeah,
your 0.02% of emotion there.
Yeah, but then it's like, you know, that's a question for you, I suppose, Ryan. It's like, like you said, you know, it comes from you, and you're like, you give the emotional hold they have on you, but then they, you know, and then but then their actions come back.
Yeah,
well, so we can put an example on it, like.
Oh, you're gone. Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
just like the exact example.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of an example that's removed, but you know, I don't know, not in. An old, like, oh, here's a classic one, like in all the movies, like an old bully from school, you know, and like in your mind, you're like, oh, you know, you're at school, you're a kid, and you know, he meant that, and he's nasty and stuff, and then he, you know, then they come back and bully you again at McDonald's, you know, then it's like you've forgiven them, but now there's like a new, I suppose it's starting a new saga, isn't it?
Yeah, so if I always look at bullying as ending the moment that they left. They only bullied you for that hour of the school day.
Yeah.
And then you went home
yeah.
and you bullied yourself.
Okay.
Thinking about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the bully isn't them after that.
Yeah.
The bully is the story you've put onto that experience that reminds you of other stories, which makes it hurtful. If someone calls me a purple leper, I won't get upset.
Okay.
If someone says, hey, you failed me and you lied, I'll be like, oh.
You disappointed me.
Yeah.
Ryan.
Yeah, so they're both not nice things to say.
Yeah.
But my experiences have put more emotional weight on one of them.
Yeah.
So then the art of forgiveness isn't forgiving the individual's actions. It's letting go of the emotions that you're putting onto it. So if someone's trying to punch me, I'll hit them back.
Yeah.
If someone punches me a week ago,
yeah.
Do I go home and punch myself in the face?
Dude, okay, we're getting somewhere now. Yeah,
you know what I mean. I don't.
I've never been to a therapist before, but this.
Awesome. Oh yeah,
yeah. Can see the value. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, because a lot of it is just, it's creating a demon out of something, isn't it? Yourself and bullying yourself or just thinking about it. The way I put it is you've got neuron paths in your head, right? And when you, like music, right? When you're learning guitar, you're cutting neuron paths.
Oh, okay.
You know, in you know the shapes that you take in your fingers when you're playing different chords. You know, as you practice, they get easier to do and you can make the shapes quicker and blah, blah, blah. And it's like cutting those neuron paths.
Oh, okay.
And like, and I visualize it as like an actual path, like a bush track, you know. And the more you walk down that track, the more of a track it becomes. And the less you use that track, the more it grows over. You know, all the grass grows up and it's no longer a track. And I see that with things like this. Again, this is my, you know, 0.002 emotion logical robot dude. But that's what I do is, because I visualize it like that, I think, okay, if something's bothering me or, you know, there's a, you know, like in this case, there's that, you know, got punched face in the face and you go home and think about it and it hurts you. You know, you cut off the neuron path.
Mm.
So I'm like, don't go down that neuron path, that path, and it won't turn into a deep, you know, set path that won't never go away. Mm. You know, let it grow over. So I always do that. So with bad experiences and... unless you can fix it by directly addressing it. If it's something that you need to just forget and move on, then you just let the neuron paths grow over. Divorce is a good way to practice that.
Yeah, that's grown over.
Like, yeah, yeah. Jesus. So that kind of stuff as well, like where it's like it's happened, it's done. You're moving on with your life and there's no benefit or it's so not productive to think about it. And that's cutting that neuron path. You know, so I'm like, okay, let it grow over, and just and then it becomes a something in the distance. And when a year later, you think about it, and it seems light and easy. Whereas if you've like been thinking about it and cutting that path, you know, then that demon's there, and it kind of you're feeding it. Mm. You know.
So I agree to a point. So it's like,
yeah.
If I what I say I become, if I keep saying I'm this, I'm that, and a lot of people said, you know, I do too much self-deprecating humor.
Yeah,
and I say negative things about myself, so then it seems to. So that I get that.
Yeah,
I think about using your neural pathway analogy. So you got this trigger, that and this pattern of dealing with problems.
Mm.
So you learn as a kid when this problem presents itself, you react this way
because
it protects you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you see the bully,
yeah,
you're like, oh, I know this pathway. Just react.
Yeah.
Bam. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. You punch. Maybe not so much. I navigate a sweep or cry. I just go cry.
But yeah, punch. Totally, man. Like, yeah. Practice makes permanent.
Practice makes permanent. So then, the question is, how do you create a more efficient and better pathway? Is you need to have proof that the pathway isn't as efficient or as good as what it could be. So it's like, if every time I react to people and they're like hurtful, and I think people are hurtful, I need to teach myself that actually people aren't hurtful. And I do that by exposing the path to them.
Yeah.
And then breaking the path because of the awareness, and then rebuilding a different one based on a more healed approach of expressing vulnerability and then accepting it.
Yeah.
So I saw the analogy was horrible for my example, but basically, I think the way to heal is to be aware that you're going down the path.
Yes.
And to give proof that it's wrong.
Yeah.
And that proof comes from exposing yourself to people that love you. Sounds weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just getting your wang out. No. Exposing.
Expose yourself to those.
Just do helicopters.
Yeah. Yo. Yeah.
No, but like sharing your emotions or sharing your vulnerability with people at a small level.
Mm-hmm.
And then they reciprocate and say, hey, actually, I still like you.
Mm.
And then you start building a different path.
Mm.
I think that's, for me, it's been helpful.
As opposed to, man. Yeah.
Anyways, we've done an hour. So.
It's easy, man.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
We talked about business and leadership. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very, very professional.
Yeah.
Gosh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
No, didn't, it, that's not where I expected it to go.
Yeah, me either. Yeah. So here we are.
But hey.
Bomb, done.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thanks, mate.